We're holding on page Ayin Beis in Shabbos, Ois Kuf Yud Beis. The last thing we learned yesterday was about what happens to a person as they get old. And we talked about in particular Barzillai HaGiladi from David HaMelech's times, where the Gemara said he was shot off Bezima. He was very addicted to Znus, or maybe not even Znus, but just to Tashmish. And therefore that aged him prematurely. So when he's 80 already, he says he's lost all his faculty. So now that brings us to something the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi Omer. And here we're quoting this as a brisa, actually. It's actually almost the same words are part of the last Mishnah of Kinyan. So in fact, some of the Mephoshim there say the same way as we have at the end of Pirkei Avos, where brisas were added on to the end of the Mishnah, and people now think of them as part of the Mishnah. It may be the same thing over here, that this started out as a brisa, as the Gemara is quoting it over here, and then eventually it became part of the Mishnah. Barzillai HaGiladi from David HaMelech's times. Yeah. Anyway, so now the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi Omer, Talmidei Chachamim calls man shema zkinin chochma nitsefes behem. Talmidei Chachamim, the more they get older, the more chochma increases in them. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Bishishim chochma, among the aged there is chochma, va'orech yamim tvuna, and with length of days comes more understanding. On the other hand, on the other hand, the older they get, the more foolishness increases in them. Shenemar, as a pasuk in that same perek says, Mesir suffer than emonim, Hashem takes away the speech of the trustworthy ones, or some of the Mephoshim, they explain that emonim can also mean the ones who talk a lot, Meloshin Na'um, the Tams Kenim Yikach, and Hashem takes away the understanding of the elders. So in other words, so you have two psukim, both almost back to back over there. One says that people become wiser as they're older, and the other says, on the contrary, they become more foolish as they're older. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi explains that the difference, that's the difference between Pamina Chachamim and Amei Aretz. So therefore, so that fits with what we were just saying, that Barzillai being an Amei Aretz, then therefore he was of the second type. So now this, that it is, again, we have it in the Mishnayos as the end of the last Mishnah in Kinim. And the context is over there. The last Mishnah describes a whole series of complicated cases where a person is bringing karbonis. A person is supposed to bring bird karbonis, and there's a mix-up of what kinds of birds it was supposed to be, and which one was done as a chatas and which one as an oila, and so forth. And depending on all the different circumstances that it describes in the Mishnah over there, you wind up that the person ends up having to bring a much larger number of karbonis than they were supposed to originally. So then in this connection, the Gemara brings over there, and the Mishnah brings over there, and there it quotes it in the name of Rav Shimon ben Akasha, the statement that we have in the Gemara over here. So there's a hadron on Masechta Kinim that the Rebbe gave. It's punt in Chelik Yud Zayin for Tazria. As of course, Tazria talks, the beginning of it talks about a Yoledes and bringing her Korbanus, and that's the case that the Mishnah describes over there. And among other things, the Rebbe describes, what's the point? How does this connect with what it said before? And the gist of the explanation is, so we'll say like this. Now, on the one hand, so why is it Taka? What's the reason behind what we're saying over here, that as Talmid Chachamim get older, they become wiser, and as Amei Aretz become older, they become dumber? So different Mephoshim talk about the Maharal talks about, and different others, the idea being that as a person's gashmius weakens, his chumrius weakens, then therefore he has more ability to absorb and to teach ruchnius. So the Talmid Chochmah who has that, then his chochmah increases, as opposed to the Amei Aretz who doesn't have that. His whole seichel is all a very gashmiistic type. So therefore, as he gets older, then as his physical body goes, so does his spiritual one, so does his mental one. But what? One second. But on the other hand, that Rebbe talks about in the Sicha, still though, I mean, all that may be so, but still you would think as the person is getting older, naturally, and we just have the whole description in the Gemara, and we're going to go on more talking about it more, how the body is falling apart. Shouldn't that, after all, have a certain effect even on the Talmid Chacham? Fine, it may not be, he won't become dumber like the Amei Aretz, but at least it should be, at best he'll stay as is. How do we get that he's going to be wiser? But we see from that earlier in that Mishnah that you have the more doubts you have as far as what kind of korban it is, the more you have a greater number of korbanos that are being brought, and therefore honoring Hashem with more korbanos, and therefore, so now the Mishnah says, in the same vein, this is the even though the Talmud Chacham is getting weaker in Bederech HaTeva, how could you expect that that will make a greater ability to understand and to teach Torah? Nevertheless, that's how Hashem makes it. That's how it is. So that's the connection. That's the connection between the first part and the last part of that Mishnah.
Yeah. Isn't there a point, though, even with the Talmud Chacham, they reach a point where they get senile and they lose everything?
It can happen. It can happen. I mean, you know, there have been
older and older.
Yeah, there have been Talmud Chachamim who got Alzheimer's or whatever when they were older. Yeah, but yeah. I guess we're talking Torah Rov to Dabra, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so now getting back to Daushin and the Psukim from Kehelas that talk about old age. So now the Gemara is going to quote and Daushin the next Pasuk. So again, let's quote the Pasuk in full and then we'll deal with it phrase by phrase. The next Pasuk after the ones that we were doing before continues, Gami Gavoya Yiro, also they're afraid of heights, V'chaschatim Baderech, and there's fear and terror on the road, V'yonetz HaShoked, and the almond tree will blossom, the Yistabel HaChogav, and the grasshopper will drag itself around. The Gemara is going to explain what all that means. The Sofer HaAviyona, and the Aviyona, which the Gemara will explain what that means, is going to cease. One possibility is the word Aviyona, among other things, it can mean the berries of the slash plant that we talked about the other day, but the Gemara is going to give it a different meaning over here. And then the Pasuk continues, Ki Holecha Adam Abeis HaLamai, because the person is going to his eternal home, the Sofer HaBashuk HaSofdim, and the mourners are wandering around in the streets. So now the Gemara is going to darshan this Pasuk phrase by phrase. Gamli Gavoya Yiro, when the Pasuk says also they're afraid of heights, that means Shafilo Gavshushis Ktana, even a little mound of dirt in the road, Doma Olav Kahore Horim, an old person feels like it's a very tall mountain because he has a hard time stepping over it. The chaschatim baderech, when the pasuk continues, there's chaschatim on the road. So that means b'shosh mahalach baderech, an old person when he's walking on the road, nasa liboy uloy tvohim tvohim. He starts having more and more fears. So tvohim, in other words, the Gemara is darshaning the word chaschatim. We know many times that the hay can be interchanged with a ches in Joshua, so therefore the Gemara is davishing in the word chat chatim as if it was hat chatim with two hays, and therefore relating it to the word tva, which means to be amazed or shocked. So like the person is afraid and always like second guessing himself, like can I really take this walk? Am I going to make it to my destination? That's because he has a hard time walking. Rashi on the Pasuk actually says that it just means that you don't even have to douch in it that way by interchanging the ches for a hey. You can just say you have the word chasas, which means fear, like vayhi chitas alekim. So v'chaschatim baderech means he has tremendous fears and terrors when he's walking on the street. Anyway, the yonetz hashoked, then the Pasuk continues, the almond blossoms, zu kaliboses, that refers to the kaliboses, which is, so Rashi describes it as the hip bone. The Targum on the Pasuk explains that it's actually the tailbone. Whatever it is, as a person gets older, their muscles weaken, and then therefore the bones around their hips and around their tailbone or whatever start sticking out. So in that sense, it's like a tree blossoming. So the same way, like these bones start sticking out of the body where before they were covered with muscles and fat. The stabel achogav, the pasuk continues, the chogav drags itself around, elu agovos, so we understand that the word chogav would darshaning as if it said ogav, because again, ches and ayin, both being guttural letters, you can exchange one for the other. Agovos means the buttocks, the backside. So as a person gets older, it feels like a big burden to drag around behind it. the suffer ha'aviyona, and then when the pasuk continues, the aviyona, go, the aviyona disappears, zuchemda, that refers to the desire for women. In other words, aviyona is meloshen ova, which means to want or to desire. So when he gets older and he loses that, which the Gemara brings in this connection. Rav Kahana have a posik sidra kamederab. Rav Kahana one time was reading and teaching sections of Tanakh in front of Rav. he mut, you know, would say, like, he would be quoting a pasuk, and then Rav or whoever else was there would be darshaning, or would be darshaning on it. Ki mutal, a high krah, when he got to this pasuk, nogid v'itmach. Then Rav gave a big sigh and a krech. Omar, so Rav Kahana, says to himself, Shmamina bata lechemda de Rav. I can see from that that Rav's chemda, his desire for this must have gone away because he's old already, and therefore he's krechting over the fact that he doesn't have anymore. So why should that be a reason? Why should that be a reason for him to krecht? So different mafoshim say a couple of things. First of all, we talked about yesterday that it is mesim shalom b'bayis, that creates more of a shalom bias between the husband and the wife, the fact that they're able to have relations. So now that he lost his cheshek for that, so that means that an important method of keeping shalom between him and between himself and his wife is gone, and therefore he's sighing over it. The other possibility is we know the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, and particularly that even if a person has had children when he's younger, he still shouldn't stop. He should continue to have children even in his old age. You never know; the later children might be better. So the fact that Rav now is unable to father children anymore is a reason why he's krechting and sighing when he reached this pasuk. So all of these things are describing what happens as a person gets older, and therefore Shlomo HaMelech is stressing. So while you still have your full strength and your full tivus and everything, is the time to do tshuva rather than waiting for later on. Agav, in this connection, you know, we're saying over here that there comes a point in a person's life when he usually loses that cheshek. Then Rabbi Avigdor Miller tells in one of his svarim, he tells about a famous American Supreme Court Justice, Oliver Wendell Holmes. One time he lived a long life. He was in his 90s one time, and he's walking along the street and he sees a pretty woman and he sighs and he says, "Oh, to be 70 again." Like, you see, that's the kind of thing. He's got practically one foot in the grave, and that's all he can think about. So normally at that age already you should have the supper, have a yona, and he didn't get the message apparently. So you see this top mind among American jurists, you see, you know, and what kind of things his mind is lying. Anyway, okay.
Oh, it never goes away.
But in other words, normally at a certain age, certain aspects of the Yetzer Hara go away, we're saying over here. And therefore, in fact, you have a Gemara in Pesachim that says that Hashem finds particularly offensive a few things. And one of them, the expression is Zokin Minaif. When you have an old person who still is into Neof and into Znus and whatever, it's not normal. A normal person, when he gets to that age already, he shouldn't have the taiva for that anymore, as we're saying over here. So if he still is, then Hashem finds that like particularly unnatural and offensive for such a person to be doing that. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Since we're talking about taiva for women, Omer of Kahana, my dichtiv, what does it mean? The pasuk says, "Ki hu Omer vayehi." Hashem said, and it came to be. The rest of the pasuk we know is Hutziva vayamod, that Hashem commanded it and it stands. So ki hu Omer vayehi zu isha. This refers to the fact that a man has a taiva for a woman. Meaning, in other words, b'derech hateva, if it weren't for Hashem specially arranging it like that, you wouldn't normally have that a man would have a taiva for a woman to want to get married. But who Omar, Hashem said that it should be, vayehi, and that's how it became like that. That's the point. In other words, Hashem arranged it specifically that way. But if it weren't for that, then it wouldn't be a normal expected thing. In fact, we have throughout Shas the Shurdish Hoya is used in connection with marriage. Whatever the Lashon is, you always have the word Havaya, the Yotza Vahoysa, the Ish Acher, and other such expressions like that, where the word Vahoysa and similar expressions means to be married. So therefore, Vayehi connects with that, so it means marriage. But the Maharal also mentions the point that it means that this is something, you don't have these things. You don't have marriage and you don't have children, Lamaila, in the higher world. So therefore, but it means Hashem, so to speak, said and commanded something that exists only in this world that you won't find in any other world, namely over the concept of marriage and children. So when it continues, Hutziva v'yamid elabonim, when it says Hashem commanded, and it stands, that means the children that continue after a person. So Marsha explains like this. Really, you have two reasons why you have this mitzvah of oina. A husband has a mitzvah every so often to have relations with his wife, at least every so often. So now there's two basic purposes. One is because she has a taiva for it, and you have to satisfy her, and you have to satisfy her. And two, in order to accomplish peri v'riv. So therefore, that's the two parts of the pasuk we're saying over here. Ki hu amavayehi. Hashem made a rule. You have to be with your wife in order to satisfy her. And hutzi vavayamed, that Hashem also commanded that there should be pruvu in order to build the next generation. And why do we need that? Because Tana, because we learn in a Braisa. Isha chemes molitzaya. When you think about it, a woman is a bag full of filth. A human body b'chlal is full of filth. Opia molidam, and her entrance, meaning the area, the private area over there, is full of blood. And yet everybody is always running and chasing after women. So we see, in other words, it's something that Hashem specially set up, even though you would think, if it weren't for that, why should anybody have a taiva for women? But Hashem put that in the world, and therefore people have such a taiva because Hashem needed that, and Hashem set it up that way in order that that's how the world works. That's what everybody brings in Tanya and Perek Yudalad, yeah, that if you have a person who needs, a person may need, if he's into Tivus, then he may need to think of things like that in order to help cool off his Tivus and put them in their proper perspective. It could be, you know, also we had just before the whole thing about Barzilai Aguiladi, maybe that's why the Gemara is after bringing this over here. If a person realizes that he's going down the path of Barzilai Aguiladi, then he better for a while think of Isha's Chemis Malayat Soya, etc., in order to help put things back in their proper perspective. And if not, then on the other hand, once he gets himself on an even keel, then he should realize that the attraction to a woman is a basic thing that Hashem put into nature, and there's a very good reason for it in order to accomplish peri v'rivya and so forth. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to the Psukim from Kehelas, the pasuk continues, Ki hoylecha adam al beis ha'lamai, the person goes to his eternal home. So now the expression. Now, what's beis olam moy? Why not al beis ha'olam? It's the same place everybody goes on the face of it. So, Amr Yitzchok Malamet called tzaddik to tzaddik, oisnim unosnim loy moder lofi kvoido. Every tzaddik is given his own place, his own level in Gan Eden, according to his cover, according to what he deserves. So, therefore, in other words, so that's al beis olam moy. It's like his own eternal world, and olam moy also means his world. It's like a world unto himself. It's like a human king who comes together with his ministers, his servants, into a city. When they come into the city, they all go through the same gate. But then when they go to sleep for the night, each one is given a lodging place appropriate to his rank. So the same way, it actually says everybody dies in the same way, but every person gets their own unique level and place in Gan Eden. Marsha says the one gate over here in the first part of the Nimshal can also refer to the gate of Gan Eden. There's one gate into Gan Eden that all the Neshamas go through, but then they each go to their respective places in it. Okay, then the Pasuk continues. V'amar Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv. Now, what does it mean? Another Pasuk. Now, here, right before the Pasuk was Schoras Bodacha that began this whole section in Kehelas, the last Pasuk before it ends, Ki hayaldus v'ashachrus hovel, youth and shachrus are vanity, are worthless. Now, the simple meaning of shachrus means the time when a person is younger and he has black hair. But Marsha points out, not everybody has black hair. Some people have blonde hair. Some people have other colors of hair. So why would he use dafka shachrus to represent youth? So it means dvorim sha'odim oseh b'yaldusei, means the things that a person does when he's younger, mashchirim ponav la'esiknosei, they cause his face to turn black when he's older. Rashi explains we're referring to tashmish. So a person indulges in that when he's younger. So now the result of it is, like we said before, when he's older, then he starts feeling the effects of it. And among other things, his face turns black and all the other various things that we talked about happen. Marsha says we don't necessarily, not Marsha. The Rif says actually it may not necessarily be Tashmish specifically. It means Averis in general. You have the Averis that a person did when he was younger. And now when he's older and of more mature mind, then he realizes how wrong they were and how embarrassed he is of them. You have the famous line in Masechta Sukkah when they were danced by the Simchas Beis HaSheva that the Tzaddikim, the Chassidim over there would be saying, Ashrei Yaldu Seinu Shalei Bisha Zikna Seinu, how happy is our youth that it didn't embarrass our old age. So that's the same in the same vein. The Gemara is saying over here that on the other hand, when a person doesn't realize that and he acts when he's younger in a childish and immature way, then when he's older, his face turns black from embarrassment from that. talking further about various things involving Mesim. In between, there's a piece over here. In between, there's a piece in the Gemara over here that talks about some halachas as far as Mesim. Anyway, for Amar Yitzchak, kosher rimul ames kemachat bebasar hachai. When the worms are eating the body, that's as difficult for the mess as a needle in living flesh. You know, it hurts the neshama, so to speak. Now, there are mefarshim who explain it doesn't necessarily mean that why would the neshama be hurt by it? The neshama is a ruchniyistic thing. Why would it be affected by what happens to the body? So there is an explanation that it means that it feels bad over the fact. After all, this body was its vehicle for performing mitzvahs and everything in this world, and therefore now that it's being attacked and eaten by worms, then the neshama feels bad about it. There is, in fact, an interesting thing. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ach besorei olav yichav, as the pasuk says, his flesh also pains him. In fact, there are other places that it talks about that the neshama, to a certain extent, is still tied to the body until the flesh, as long as the flesh is still intact. Once the flesh decays, then the neshama is more free to go and leave. And in fact, there's an interesting thing. It's brought in halacha. The Rashba mentions in one of his chuvas, and it's brought in halacha in Shulchan Aruch. You're allowed to use artificial means. The example that the Rashba gives is using lime, which causes things to burn and be consumed much faster. You're allowed to pour some of that over the body to make the flesh decay and then whatever faster. And then the point is, this way, in other words, the context he was talking about is they had a person who died in one place, they wanted to bury him in another place, and they were concerned the body might decay, and then they're not going to be able to transport it, so the Rashba allowed them to use this lime. It helps, to a certain extent, it helps preserve it and avoid the smell, but it also causes the flesh to dry up and decay more rapidly. So it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So the Radvaz, in fact, talks about it in turn. In one of his truvas, he says, what about our Gemara over here? He says, it's one thing when you have worms that are a natural thing that attack the body, then the neshama is pained by it. But to pour lime over it, which is not a natural thing, then that doesn't bother the neshama, he says. Further in this connection, Amar of Chista, Nafshe shel Adam misabelas olav kol shiva. A person's neshama is mourning for him for the entire 7 days of Shiva. It's mourning, Marashah says, over the body that now it's gone to mokum offer rima v'seleya. After all, the neshama can end up in Gan Eden. The guf, meanwhile, did do Torah and mitzvahs as well. So therefore, the neshama feels bad that now it's separated from it and that now that body is just going to decay. Shenema, v'nafshe olav ta'avol, that same pasuk in Eov continues, and his soul mourns for him. Uchtiv, v'yas lo'aviv, evil shivas yomim, you also have the pasuk that it says that Yosef made a 7 days mourning for Yaakov. Now we don't learn, Marashah refers to a Gemara in Moed Katan and a Tosfos over there that explains we don't actually learn the concept of Shiva from that. The concept of Shiva is considered to be Dirabanan because we have a rule, Ein Lamedin, one reason because Ein Lamedin, Mikoyim Matan Torah. We don't in general learn halachas from things that took place before Matan Torah. But nevertheless, you still have the concept that for 7 days, the neshama mourns for the body that it's been separated from and the body that's now going to decay. Further, the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda, Mesha Einloi Menachem. What happens if a mess has nobody to console him? So Rashi explains it means there's nobody to sit Shiva for him. There's nobody to be to Prava Abevos for him. So therefore, there's nobody who needs Nichum. Marsha says, no, what it means is actually that we just said the neshama mourns for the body. So now that usually you have Menachem, and usually a person is sitting Shiva and people come to console the Avelim. And with that, the neshama is also comforted. So now if you have nobody sitting Shiva and therefore there's nobody to console the neshama, so therefore we need something. So he says, what they should do is 10 people should go and sit in the place where the mess had lived, and they should sit, so to speak, sit Shiva on his behalf, even though they're not his relatives. For 7 days, Mashus. And in fact, the Gemara says, "Ahu deshachiv b'shiva vusei de Rabbi Yehuda." There was a person who passed away in Rabbi Yehuda's neighborhood. There was nobody available to be Menachem Avol because again he had no relatives. Kol Yoma have a dover, Rabbi Yehuda Be'asara. So every day during the Shiva, Rabbi Yehuda would take 10 people, the Yasli Beduchte, and they would sit in his place and they would sit over there and people would come to talk with them. After 7 days, that person who had passed away came to Rabbi Yehuda in a dream. And he told him, your mind should be at ease, because you put my mind at ease, because you were menachem my neshama, and that helped me. This is brought in Shulchan Aruch. With that said, though, that Amma says, v'loy ra'isi noyeg in Cain, I haven't actually seen people being noyeg to do that. What they do have is when a person passes away and there's nobody to sit shiva for him, then you have people say, somebody says Kaddish on his behalf. So maybe, I don't know, that Amar doesn't spell it out, but maybe that accomplishes something for the neshama as well, similar to what we're saying over here.
It sure does.
I mean, it accomplishes something for the neshama, definitely, but whether it's the same thing, but I guess we have to assume since the minhag olam is not to, in fact, have 10 people sit over there, so maybe that counts as something. There was a well-known story in that regard, by the way, of a poor woman who's saying Kaddish for her son has passed away, and after a while she thinks to herself, you know, I should also she gives money to the shamash or the shul to say it. Eventually she decides, you know, she says to the shamash, I'll give you a little extra money, pick a random name, somebody who never had Kaddish said for him, and start including him in your Kaddish as well. Kitzur Amaisa, the continuation of the story, is one day she's walking down the street. She meets this very distinguished looking old man who gives her an enormous check, enough to that she can live on comfortably for the rest of her life. She goes to the bank to cash it. To make a long story short, the president of the bank is the son of this guy who she had been having the shamash say Kaddish for, where he had been careless and didn't bother saying Kaddish for his father. And she took that up, and therefore that was her schus. And now he himself came down from the Olam HaEmes and gave her. Yeah. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rabba Bohu, Kol Sha'omer Lahem or Sha'omnim Bifneam Nes, whatever people say in front of the nest, Yedea, he knows about what they're talking about, Adshi Sasana Goilol, until the Goilol is covered. Rashi explains here and in other places in Shas that the Goilol means the lid of the Orin. So once the lid is closed, then the mess doesn't know what people are talking about anymore. But up till then, he does. So therefore, you have to be careful to only talk about things that are covered for the mess over there, not talking about Batalim or whatever. Tosfos here and in other places in Shas disagrees and says that they explain that the Goylul is more like the Matseva, like the gravestone that you put on top of the grave afterwards. And by the way, you know, Minhag Chabad is we try to put that up as soon as possible after that Shiva. Maybe that's connected with what we just said over here. We just said that for 7 days, the neshama is mourning for the body. So therefore, as soon as possible after that, we want to put up the Matseva, which is Tosfos' version of the Goylo. That way, the neshama isn't bothered as much and it's able to go more free. So the Gemara says, Pligi bar Reb Chiya v'Reb Shimon ba'Aba or Bereb. So Reb Chiya and Reb Shimon Berebi actually disagree on that point. One says that the mess knows what's being said in his presence until the golol is closed, the lid of the order in according to Rashi, or the matseva according to Tosfos. The other one says no, it's longer until the flesh decays. So the opinion that says that it's until the flesh decays, because we have the pasuk that we just quoted before, because the pasuk says his flesh pains him, implying that as long as something of the flesh still exists, then the neshama is pained by what's going on in the world, including if people are talking dvarim b'talim or whatever in his presence. In other words, v'nafsha al of tevel, as long as there is flesh, then the nefesh has a certain chayus and can still understand what's going on. So in other words, Marashah says, before we said the neshama is mourning for the body for 7 days, it doesn't take only 7 days for the body to decay. But before we were talking about the fact that the neshama is sad for what's happening to the body, but it continues to be connected to the body and to know what's going on, according to this mandamer, until Adchi is akala basar, until the flesh is completely decayed. Manda omadchi is sasima golo, in the opinion that said that it's until the golo is closed, dichtiv, because we have the posik from Kehelis that we quoted before, the Yosheba offer, our Oretz Keshahoya, the dust returns to the earth to the earth like it was, implying so the body is earth, ki offer atavel osher vel offer toshuv. So as soon as it goes back into the earth, as soon as the goyel is closed, then it would even haruach toshuv, then the spirit, the neshama, returns to Hashem, and he doesn't know any more of what's going on with the body. You have this isn't the only Gemara that discusses this point. First of all, the Gemara is going to point out soon that tzaddikim, exceptional tzaddikim, are different. They have a connection with their body long after they passed away. We're going to have a story in the Gemara later on. We'll get to it tomorrow, Best Hashem, where there was over 100 years after a tzaddik had passed away, and still there was still a connection over there with his guf. But besides that, you also have other Gemaras. This Gemara in Brachas that we learned a while back that talks about that the neshamas still have a certain connection with what's going on in the world. They still know of what's going on in the world and they can report it. Although the Gemara says maybe not. Maybe they don't know it directly. Maybe they hear it from the Malach in charge of them, the Malach Duma, who the Gemara is going to describe later over here. So it's not so simple that after the flesh is decayed, then the neshama has no more connection with this world. Depends on the person's level, and sometimes it's still has, and sometimes it still has a connection.
The neshamas are still hovering.
So that's the thing. So you have, that's what I'm saying. You have different types of people and different levels of neshamas. You also have, you know, here the Gemara is not getting into the five different levels of the neshama. You know, I mean, that you'll find in the Zohar and in Sifrei Kabbalah and Sifrei Chassidus. But so you have, and you know, you have, for example, the Mittel Rebbe wrote Kuntres Haishtakfus, which is a kuntres describing what's accomplished by going to daven by the caver of a tzaddik. Very, very, very negaya to this week's parasha where we have Kolev davening by the Maris HaMachpela. And he mentions over there a number of points that you get out of Hishtakfus, what you get out of davening by the caver of a tzaddik. And among them is that, yeah, the tzaddik's neshama still has a certain connection to it and is still hovering over there. And therefore, he's more able, therefore, he listens to, therefore, he hears what you're saying, and he can be more of a good to better. So, yeah. So the Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan. So we learn in a Braisa on the the pasuk says, "V'yosheva ofra al aretz kishahoya," that the dust will return to the earth as it was. And the pasuk continues, "V'haruach toshuv alav kim Hashem nesana," the spirit will return to Hashem who gave it. So that means tneha loy k'moshin asana l'chobatara. It means you should give back your neshama to Hashem in purity, the same way as He gave it to you in purity. Afat batara, the same way you should be returning your soul to Hashem in purity. Moshe l'malach bas of Adam, it's like a case of a human king, shecholak bigvei malchus la'avodim. He gave out royal clothing to his servants. Pichim shebehem kipum, so the smart ones among them folded them up, v'nichum b'kufsa, and they put them safely away in a box. Tipshim shebehem hochu v'os behem malacha, and the foolish ones went and did work with them. Now, Marsha points out, it doesn't mean to begin with, he hadn't given them these clothing just to put in a box. The idea was that they should wear it. But the pikhim, the smart ones, realized because these are royal clothing and we don't want it to get dirty, therefore we're going to make sure to wear it only when we're doing work that's not going to get us dirty. When they're going to do any kind of work that might stain the clothes, then they put it away carefully in the box and they wear other clothes. Whereas the tipshim was saying would use it indiscriminately for any kind of malacha and not caring how dirty it gets. L'yamim bikash ha-malach es kelav. So eventually the king asks for his clothes back. So the smart ones gave it back to him very nicely, very nice, which the Gemara explains elsewhere. It can mean something like ironing or polishing or whatever. It's something, not really polishing, but whatever, something that you do to clothes to whiten them and to make sure they're nicely, they're in good shape. So, and the foolish ones returned them when they were dirty. So the king is very happy to see the smart ones because the crass tipshim, and he's angry at the foolish ones. So the smart one, he says, let's put the kalim back, let's put the clothing back into the treasury. And they, these smart people, can go to their homes in peace because they accomplished what they were supposed to. As far as the foolish ones, he says, the clothes will have to be put in the laundry, which represents Gehenim. And those foolish people are going to be thrown into jail, representing what happens with the body and with the Nefesh of Bahamas or whatever person who acted that way. So Afa Kadosh Baruch Hu, Agufam Shal Tzadikim Omer, when it comes to the bodies of the Tzadikim, and Tzadikim refine their bodies as well. So therefore, Omer, so the Pasuk says, so they're like the smart people who made sure to keep the clothing representing the Nefesh HaLekis clean. Therefore, so Hashem says, Yovei Shalom, let them come in peace. Yonuchu Amashkavosam, they will rest in peace in where they're lying. So their rest in the caver will be comfortable. That's as far as their bodies. And as far as their neshamas, it says, the soul of my master, this is Abigail talking to David, will be bound up in the bond of life. So the bond of life means Gan Eden, means the place of ultimate closeness to Hashem. So, and Maharsha points out, Abigail was one of the seven Nevi'ahs. So she is saying Nevuah and saying that David and Neshama will be, but Tzurah Rechayim will be bound up and placed under the Kisei HaKavod, as the Gemara is going to say soon.
She went into Gan Eden, didn't she?
No, you're thinking of Serach. You're thinking of Serach Bas Osher. But Serach Bas Osher was not a Nevi'ah. She was the one who told Moshe where Yosef's coffin was, and she's the one who validated Moshe's credentials as the Goyal because he said Pocket Bakadi, but no, she wasn't a Nevi'ah. No, Abigail. No, but Abigail was one of the seven Nevi'ahs. So this is they have the whole story over there where her husband Novel was a big Rosha and a very stingy guy. So David asked before it's right before Yom Tov, it's right before Rosh Hashanah, and Novel is making a big party. So David asks for some food for himself and his men, and Novel very rudely snubs them and then curses out David. So David figures the guy is a murdered by Malchus, we have to punish him. And Abigail goes and meets up with David with a present of food and explains to him that at first, among other things, that Novel is not really a murdered by Malchus because you're not well known as king yet, etc., etc. But she gives him a whole speech over there. And in the middle of the speech, she mentions this point, that she says that your soul will be bound up in the bond of life, meaning you're going to have a great place in Gan Eden under the Kisak of it. On the other hand, she continues, as the Gemara is going to now quote the second half of the Pasuk in a minute. So first, regarding the bodies of the Rishoyim, the Pasuk says, Hashem says there's no peace for the wicked. So even their bodies are not at peace. And regarding their neshamas, you have the second half of the pasuk that Abigail says to David, the ace nefesh oyevecha, as far as the souls of your enemies, you call ena b'soich kafakola. Hashem will sling it in the hollow of the sling. Marsha explains that she's not referring to Shoal. Earlier in the pasuk, she mentions that someone is chasing you. By that, she means Shoal. She certainly doesn't mean that Shoal is going to end up with Kafakela. He's a tzaddik, after all. She meant people like Doyeg and other enemies of David who were harassing him and persecuting him. She may also mean Novel. She may also mean Novel himself, who treated David so rudely. Anyway, so what is this kafakela? So Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Nishmosim shal tzedikim gnuzas tachas kisei hakavod. The neshamas of tzedikim are hidden away and stored under the kisei hakavod, as close as possible to Hashem. As she says, the neshama of my master, of you, will be bound up in the bond of life. And the bond of life means to be as close as possible to Hashem. In fact, she continues, es Hashem alekecha. In fact, Rashi quotes. So that means, so to speak, with Hashem in his throne. V'shal Rishoyim, as far as the neshamas of the Rishoyim, zoymemos, they will be bound up. Rashi explains that zoymemos is related to a word that means a muzzle. So they're going to be muzzled, v'hochos, and they keep on going like that, like we just said before, they get thrown into jail. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, Ves nefesh yivecha, you call ena b'soich kapakola, that the neshamas of your enemies, of the Rishoyim, will be slung into the sling of the hollow, into the hollow of the sling. So Yad Yosef brings over here in turn from Masoret Hashas on the side of the Gemara. What it means is, like this, you would think normally you have a stone is placed in a sling and it doesn't stay in there, it gets slung out of there. Here what we mean is, so to speak, it's going to be whirled around in the sling and still stay in there. So like it's stuck in there, but still not able to go free. In fact, Maharsha says that there's a lot of different explanations what kafakela is exactly. Maharsha says over here, one point is it refers to the concept of gilgulim. A tzaddik's neshama has no need in general to come back as a gilgul, but a rasha may need to come back multiple times. You have psukim, that you have a posuk in Eov that implies that it may be as many as three times. And sometimes you even have, it can be a gilgul into, it doesn't even have to be into a person, it can be into an animal or into a vegetable or something like that. And then it's much harder for it to be, to get its tikkun. So all that is represented by being slung in the sling, like being thrown back down to earth and put into a new body and have to start all over again. Different other mephoshim talk about different angles on it. The Maharal explains like this: what's the point? A rasha is always going to one extreme or another. We know that Amam tells us in Hilchos Deis you're supposed to stick to the middle in general, but a rasha doesn't do that. He goes to one extreme or the other. Therefore, his punishment is kafakela, which also is in effect going from one extreme to another, being thrown hither and yon. And there's an explanation in Chassidus, which basically the basis of it goes back to Udi Usfarim, which is the idea that Kafakela is, the neshama is shown for a moment what a lakus is, and then it's thrown away from there and brought back down into Gashmius, and that itself is a tremendous yisurim for it, that it got to see what the real good of a lakus is, and now it's being taken away from it. But so then we're Simon Batov, and the Gemara will continue tomorrow, Bas Hashem. We talk about Sadikim and Beinanim. We talk about Sadikim and Rishoyim, what happens in the Neshamas of Beinanim. So that we'll deal with tomorrow. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Go'ola of Dalad Sivan. Speaking of Tchias HaMesim, as we just were, the time of Tchias HaMesim is on Erev Shabbos, as the Zohar says, that towards the evening of Friday, Erev Shabbos, that's the time when the dead will revive, as the Pasuk says, La'est Seis HaShoyavos, at the time, and towards the evening when the women, when the girls are coming out to draw water, we have that by the story of Rivka, so that refers to the Talmid HaChamim, who draw from the water of Torah, so that's the time, La'est, that the time, is the time when they come and shake themselves off from their dust and have Tchias HaMesim, which we'll talk more about Tchias HaMesim actually in our Gemara tomorrow, Rest Hashem. Halacha, we started talking about if you have different people are competing to buy a particular house or field or whatnot. So we talked about the order of precedence, relatives, friends, some of the chachamim, etc. So if you have, if one of them is a bala metzer, so he is a bar metzer, so he has the adjoining field, so then he has first rights, and even if you already sold it to somebody else, he has the right to pay off that other person and take over the field, even if that other person was a Talmud Chacham and a relative and so forth, and the Bar Metzer is an Amah Oretz and far away, nevertheless he still gets first rights. All of this is based on the idea that the Pasuk says, Valsisa Yoshev Atarim, you should do what's right and good, and it's right and good that the person should have two contiguous fields. Yeah, by the way, the famous thing that the famous sikha that ever talks about, we learned earlier in Masech the Shabbos about Moshe with Rabbeinu with the Malachim and the whole argument about whether the Torah should stay up in Shemayim or come down on earth, and various Sfarim talk about that it was an argument over Bar Metzra. So there's a sikha where it ever analyzes exactly how Moshe won the argument. And the answer is because the Gemara says there in the Sugya, Bar Metzra and Bava Metzia, that if one party wants to buy the place to plant it, and the other one wants to build a house over there, then he takes precedence. Since we're using the Torah to build a house, Lasis Leis Baruch Tid V'Tachtonim, so therefore our claim to the Torah outweighs that of the Malachim.